We are holding on Chof Hey Omud Aleph, about six lines from the bottom. Yeah. Okay, we mentioned the line begins at Bori Vayomer, six lines from the bottom. Okay, so we learned, we talked about Mordechai, you mind closing the door over there? Okay. We learned about the cows that transported the Oren back from the land of the Plishtim to the Jewish parts of Eretz Yisrael, and the Shira that they sang and all. That in turn brought us into another machlokas, where we have a similar machlokas Amiroyim about the meaning of when we have that Yeshua made the sun stand still. How long did he make it stand still for? That in turn, in that connection, the Pasuk mentions Sefer HaYosher, so that brought us into a discussion of another place where it mentions Sefer HaYosher in David's Kina about when Shaul and his sons are killed in battle, that he says that now the Jewish people have to learn how to fight with bow and arrow, as it says in Sefer HaYosher, and we discussed a few possibilities what Sefer HaYosher is. So now, the Gemara is going to do another one where we have another machlokas, where we have a machlokas where we have the same three Amiroyim, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lazar, and Rabbi Shmuel Ben Achmeni, arguing on the meaning of a pasuk. This one also involves Shaul. No, this one doesn't mention Sefer HaYosher. This is just another case where we have a pasuk just like we had before about Vayishana HaParos. And about the sun standing still, where we had the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan and the opinion of Rabbi Lazar and the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel Ben Achmeni. So here also we have. Okay, so the pasuk describes in Sefer Shmuel, it describes how Shaul came to meet Shmuel for the first time. He's looking for his father's lost donkeys. To make a long story short, he winds up in the city where Shaul is, he winds up in Shmuel's city, and Shmuel is told by Nevuah that the person who's going to be coming to meet you tomorrow is going to be the one you're to anoint as the king of the Jewish people. So, well, Shaul was a little hesitant about it at first, but before we get to that point, anyway, so Shmuel invites him to the Suda that they were having, and Shmuel invites him to the Suda. And Shmuel invites Shaul to the Suda that they're having and has him seated at the head of the table. And he tells the cook.
This was after the cows and everything.
This is after the. This is a few chapters later. That story with the cows is in Shmuel Aleph Perkei and Vav. This one is in Perkei. Okay. So this is after the Jewish people. So Perkei and Vav is the story with the Aron. Perek Zion is Shmuel is getting the people back to normal. Hashem makes a nest and the Plishtim are defeated. Shmuel gets everybody to do tshuva, etc. And things are going swimmingly until in Perek Ches they start demanding a king. And then in Perek Ches Hashem tells and then Perek Ches Shaul shows up. So now we're in Perek Ches. So Shmuel tells the cook by the Suda over there, he tells him there's a certain piece that I told you to set aside for an important guest. I want you to give it to this person who's now sitting over here, Shaul. And the pasuk says, "Vayorem atabach et ha-shoik v'he'olah." So the cook lifted up the shoik, which is one part of the leg of an animal, v'he'olah, and what's above it, which we're going to discuss. That's the point we're going to discuss is what is v'he'olah. Vayosim lifnei Shaul, and he put it before Shaul and said, "Here is the portion that Shmuel told me to reserve for you." So my v'he'olah. So the shoik, we know what it is. An animal's leg has three long bones in it. You have the yerech, which is the upper leg corresponding to a human being's upper leg. You have the shoik, the thigh, right? You have the shoik, which corresponds to a human being's lower leg, and then you have a third bone, which actually corresponds to the palm of the hand or the sole of the foot in a human being, because in kosher animals basically walk on tiptoe. Their hooves are basically the equivalent of our fingernails. So the shoik is the middle of those bones. We know what it is. What's v'he'olel? My v'he'olel. Rabbi Yochanan am a shoik v'alya. So Rabbi Yochanan says what it is he gave him the shoik as well as the alya, the fat tail of the animal. Now when an animal is brought to the korban, then that piece is brought on the mizbeach. Here. It was during the period when there was no central mizbeach. The people can make bamos and bring korbanos anywhere. So not necessarily, therefore, with the aliyah being brought on the mizbeach. My v'he'olah. So why are we? And the point is, the aliyah is a particularly good piece of meat. It's a fat tail. Some certain breeds of sheep store fat in their tails, and therefore it's a very good gishmaka piece. to my Ve'olah. So why are we calling the tail Ve'olah? Demisamcha Shoik La'alya, because the alya rests upon the Shoik. Because you have, again, the Shoik is the middle bone. Above it, you have the thigh, and the tail is attached to the thigh. The whole thing rests on top of the Shoik. But Rabbi Elazar on the Shoik L'chazir, Rabbi Elazar says what it is he gave him the Shoik as well as the breast, the chest of the animal. And my Ve'olah, why are we calling the chest Ve'olah? D'machet lo L'chazir ilavei the Shoik. Because when it comes to doing tinufa, we have when you bring a kohen shlomim, you take the chaz of a shoik and give them to the kohenim, and first you wave them. You place the chaz on top of the shoik. Kiboy anufi, when you need to wave them for a carbon. The chaz is the chest of the animal, nowadays I think they get brisket from it or whatever. The part in the front half of the animal that faces the ground basically is chaz. So kiboy anufi, when you're going to wave it, or manfile, then you wave them together like that with the shoik and then the chaz on top of it. Therefore, the chaz can be called the he'olel. Rav Shmuel ben Nachmani, I'm a shoik v'shoiki. Rav Shmuel ben Nachmani says is what he gave him is the shoik as well as the thick muscles surrounding the thigh bone. Kachayerech, which is the area where the gidanasha is. Obviously, in those days, they knew how to take out the gidanasha in a way that you still have a solid piece of meat left. So therefore, they have the shoik and the shofi. That's what he gave. My ve'aleh. And again, why are you calling it aleha? Because shofi elevates the shoik koi. Because again, the shofi is above the shoik. Because the shoik is the middle leg of the middle bone of the leg, and the shofi is the muscles surrounding the meat surrounding the thigh, which is above that.
When they take the gita nashya, do they have to take all the nerves that come out?
They do have to take all the nerves that come out of it. So in some places in the world, they still do that. In places like in Eretz Yisrael or whatever, where meat is in shorter supply.
Right.
Here in America, they generally don't. They just sell the whole thing to goyim. But in those times, obviously, they knew
We do it. We take it out.
We don't. Generally, that's the thing. We usually just sell the whole thing to goyim. That's why you'll very rarely find...
Thigh, we sell it to goyim, yeah. Usually.
Usually the whole back half of the animal, because not only you have the gidanasha in both legs, you also have various sheets of fat and various other things that are also... But in those times, they knew how to do it properly. We also have a topic nowadays, which of the nerves there is the actual gidanasha, plus you have one of them that's also Daraisa, and another one that's only also Dirabanan, and maybe the Dakana hadn't been made yet, which were the one that's also Dirabanan. So there's a lot less tribering, a lot less taking out of veins.
So we eat the chest and the foreleg?
So we do usually eat the front half of the animal, yeah. The chest, the sides,
the chest.
Okay. So those are the three possibilities what the hell there is. The Radvaz actually has, in one of his Chovas, has a long discussion about this Gemara over here. Rashi mentions over here that isn't the Chaza and Shoik, according to Rav Elazar, that the Chaza and Shoik are being given to Shoal. What happened to giving them to the Kohenim? So he says, because again, it wasn't even, on the face of it, this was a korban. The pasuk calls it Hazebach, Yivarech Hazebach. So therefore, Rashi says, okay, but it was a bama ktana. Again, it was a private mizbeach that you're allowed to build during that time, and therefore the halacha is that there you don't have to give those to the Kohenim.
Only when
there's the central Mishkan or the Beit HaMikdash, yeah. So when you had the Mishkan in the desert, and afterwards when it was in Shiloh, but now this was after Shiloh was destroyed, so yeah. The Radvaz has a long chuva about this where he discusses all the ins and outs of it. He says, even if so, is it right that they should be taking it away from the Kohenim and giving it to Shoal? And for that matter, with the Alya, where do we ever find that the Alya is not brought on the Mizbeach by a Bama Ketana? So he explains that maybe the different opinions in the Gemara over here are actually arguing on the question, was this in fact a Korban or not? Or maybe it was a Cholin. Maybe it was Cholin. Just because the Pasuk calls, yeah, obviously the Cholin. You can give the Chazan and Shoik to whoever you want, and you can give the Alya to whoever you want.
Kohen can use the Cholin also?
Yeah, of course. But we're not saying there were any Kohen in here. Here we know there was Shoal, and we know there was Shmuel, and the Pasuk mentions there were, I think, 30 other people there invited, but we don't know whether any of them were Kohen, but that's not the point. If it wasn't a Kohen, then he could give the Chazan and Shoik to whoever he wants, and the Alya is not being brought on the Mizbeach, it's not a Kohen. If it's a carbon, then maybe that would be why Rav Shmuel ben Nachmani specifically says that it has to be the shoik and the shoifi, so that way you're not taking away anything that should have been on the mizbeach or anything that should have been given to the kohen. All right, shoifi again. We said is the muscle surrounding the thigh bone.
All right.
Yeah. So again, that is a very thick thing. It's a very thick piece of muscle, and apparently it's a very good piece of meat. But yeah. Okay. All right. So now getting back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said. We said in the Mishnah that a Jewish woman is not allowed to be alone with goyim because they're choshed on arayas. They're choshed that they may rape or seduce her, as we'll get to in the Gemara. So the question is, Ramaya Skinner, what is the scenario that we're talking about over here? Ilema b'chad, are you talking about that one Jewish woman is not allowed to be alone with one Goyish man? Well, the kavasa gabi yitzro mishori. And so what are you saying? That only because he's a Goy is it a problem, and if it was a Jew, it would be allowed? We learn in a Mishnah in Kiddushin, l'yisyachad ishachad mishtei noshim. A man is not even allowed to be alone with two women, let alone one.
Any man, in other words.
And the Binyan Shlomo points out, okay, I mean, obviously the Mishnah there is phrased as an Isser to the man, he was phrased as an Isser to the woman, but fine, there's no difference in that in general, and in Isurim, in the Torah, there's usually no difference between men and women. Even outside the Kamer. Yeah, that Gemara over there in Kedushin has stories about Amiloyim who Manus Friedman, I think, says something about it in one of his books. Doesn't want to anymore or something. I think he says based on Gemara and based on these things, just being a man and a woman being alone is itself already a sexual thing. It's already something in and of itself. That's already a kurva that is also. It's not a question of whether they actually do anything, but just the fact that they're alone together is already. Yeah. So are you going to say the case is that the Mishnah is saying that a Jewish woman is not allowed to be alone with three goyim? Now Rashi points out, what about two?
Because the Gemara there in Kiddushin explains that with two Jews, it depends. When you're in town, in principle, you're allowed to. When you're on the road, no, because one of them has to go to the bathroom, and then you have yichud between the remaining one and the woman.
But with three, it should always be allowed. So maybe the Mishnah means that a Jewish woman shouldn't be alone with three goyish men. The question is, the Kavasa Gabi Yisrael, but so fine, if you were talking a parallel case with Jews, the Prutzim Mishari, would such a thing be allowed with Jews who are Parutz, who are not careful about the Halachas of Tznius? Well, it's not, but we learn in the Mishnah there, also in the tradition,
one woman is allowed to be alone with two men, but for Omer of Yehuda Amos Yisrael,
Lo Shanu Ela B'Kshedim, this that we're saying that a woman is allowed to be alone with two men,
but only if they are kosher. Out of the Prusim, but if they themselves are Prusim, then I feel like sort of not right. Well, right, people who do Prusim, exactly. People are not careful,
and then people who we see are careless in the halachas of Tznius. They're not shomer negiya, whatever. Yeah. So then, people are sort of namiloi. Then even 10 of them, a woman is not allowed to be together with them.
And in fact, ma'isa hoyavos you are sort of a mitzvah. In fact, at one time happened that a woman pretended to be dead.
Because she wanted to. Meanwhile, so people came to do a pretend funeral. So 10 men carried her outside the city in a coffin in order to be mezana with her. And those 10 were prutzim, and obviously she herself was also.
They were
pretending that they were going to go and bury her. So we see that when you have prutzim, then there's no limit. The goyim over here were saying a porus, because that's the whole point. We're saying the choshur ala arayis. So why does the Mishnah have to tell us that a Jewish woman is not allowed to be alone with three or more goyish men when she wouldn't be allowed to be alone with three or more Jewish men who are prutzim either? The answer is like tzricha, yes, but the Mishnah was not needed only to tell us the ishto imoy. The case is if his wife is with him.
Now, with a Jew, that would be allowed. If the Jewish man's wife is with him, and then there's going to be another unrelated woman there, that would be allowed because the Jew's wife is
going to prevent him from doing anything with this other unrelated woman. But with goyim, not.
A goy's wife does not necessarily go in because, as he says, he wants to be mezana,
so does she. We're coming up on Purim now shortly. The Gemara mentions that in connection with Achashverosh and Vashti, that Achashverosh was into Znus. Vashti was also, and of course the Gemara asks there, so then why didn't Vashti want to appear there where we're unclothed? And of course we know the famous thing, because she developed Sarab. But there the Gemara mentions that expression, that when a man is involved in Znus, usually his wife is also. So if the Goy is choshered on Znus, so is she. So therefore...
Goyim developed Sarab? No, in that particular case. In that particular case, the wife is not allowed. So his wife is not necessarily going to prevent him from being the Zana with the Jewish woman. So that's what
the Mishnah is saying. Even in a case where you would be allowed Yichud with a Jewish man because his wife is with him, with a Goy you're not because they're more kosher on Arayis. Okay. The question is, the Gemara says, now fine.
But the typical Mishum Shvichus Domin. Why don't we have another reason to say why you're not allowed to be alone with them? Because you said in the Mishnah that a Jewish man
is not allowed to be alone with them because the Goy may kill the Jew. Well, by the same logic, he might equally well kill a woman. So why does the Mishnah have to tell us that a woman, that a man shouldn't be alone with them because of Shvichus Damim?
A woman shouldn't be alone with them because of Arayas.
She shouldn't be alone with them because of Shvichus Damim anyway. Why add the extra detail about Arayas?
So the Mishnah is talking about an important woman. The Mishnah is then they are afraid of her. So therefore, they would be afraid
to kill her. But the first we'll learn according to Rashi. Afterwards, we'll talk what
we'll talk about first. Starting according to Rashi, that
in that case, fine. We're not afraid that the
goyim are going to kill her because they're afraid of they're afraid of the government. They're afraid she's known to the government,
and therefore, yeah. But on the other hand, they may still seduce her.
But that's the point. That's what the Mishnah is saying. She shouldn't be alone with them because they're focused on Arayas. They may seduce her to be Nizana with them.
Because it doesn't mean that they still might not be able to talk her into it. They wouldn't necessarily dare rape her, but they might
try to seduce her.
Rav Idi says a different answer.
Isha klei zayna olel. By the way, so Rashi understands it here. The Gemara is going to talk about this in a minute. But Rashi understands at this point, when we say isha chashuva, we mean that it's both.
On the one hand, she's important, as in she has contact with the government. Therefore, they'll be afraid to kill her.
On the other hand, she's beautiful, and therefore we're afraid that they might seduce her.
Right. So if she's not important, but she is beautiful, then yeah, he might rape her, and then he might rape her and then kill her. So yeah. But if she is important, then that's what we're saying. Yeah.
Right. Okay. The Ibi says a different answer. Isha klei zayna olel. A woman has her weapon.
Which means, in other words, so what does it mean she has a weapon? Her weapons on her? It means the goy is not, well, according to Rashi, it means the goy is not going to, the goy is not, we're not concerned that the goy is going to kill her because he has an alternative with her. He can instead have relations with her. So therefore,
according to the second explanation, doesn't matter whether she is close to the government or not.
The fact of Ritzicha is a non-issue. We don't suspect that they're going to kill her.
Because we have the suspect that they seduce or rape her, but not kill her. They could. That's the first explanation said that. But
the second explanation says that the second explanation, Rav Idi is saying, they would rather, given a choice, they'd rather have relations with her. Wait, we'll talk soon what Tosfos said about
that. The first explanation was that if she's an Isha Hashuva,
that she's important, that she's important, she has government contact, and she's also beautiful, then fine, there's no issue of Ritzicha, but there is an issue that they may try to seduce her. The second answer is it doesn't really matter what her status is. Whether she's Hashuva or not, we can assume the Goy is more likely to try to rape or seduce her rather than kill her. Therefore, the Mishnah can't say she shouldn't be among them because they might kill her. All the Mishnah can say is she shouldn't be among them because they might be Mizana with her, willingly or unwillingly. Okay, so the question is, my benayu, then the bottom line is, either way, a woman is not supposed to be alone with them, so what's the difference? What's the practical difference in halacha? The answer is, ikke benayu, ishe chashuva ben ha'anoshim, v'she'ena chashuva ben ha'anoshim. The difference between them would be, what if the woman is important as she's close to the government, but she's not beautiful? Well, according to Rav Yirmiyah, therefore, apparently there's not a problem. There's not a problem of that they'll kill her, because again, she's Karev L'Malchus, she's Chashuv in that sense. There's not a problem that they're going to try to seduce her, because she's ugly. So therefore, on the face of it, there ought not to be a problem. Whereas according to Rav Idi, that we're saying, Isha Klei Zayna Olel, it doesn't really matter so much whether she's beautiful or not, or whatever. They may still try to rape her anyway, and therefore, so therefore, she shouldn't be alone with them either way.
What does it mean, Klei Zayna?
Klei Zayna Olel literally means she has her weapons on her, but it means... figuratively, it means, in other words, that they're not going to kill her because they have an alternative. They can instead be mizana with her, willingly or unwillingly. Yeah.
What if she's beautiful? Why am I living in toxic?
Okay, but nevertheless, though, still, okay.
To kill her.
One second. So Tosfos actually doesn't mention Mayim Gnuvim specifically, but Tosfos has a number of questions with Rashi's explanation. One of them is we said the other day, goyim are attracted even to animals of Jewish people, let alone to Jewish women, whether they're beautiful or not. Tosfos has a number of other problems with Rashi's explanation. Another difference is that we never find anywhere in Shas that when we talk about all the dinim of Shavuya, a woman is captured by Goyim, that we're concerned whether she may have been raped or not. Never does the Gemara make a distinction whether she's beautiful or not, whether they're likely to be attracted to her. Okay, fine, but there's still there's a certain amount of objective beauty and then an objective ugliness.
Okay.
Anyway, okay, so Tosfos mentions a couple of other possibilities. First of all, Tosfos says when we say Isha Klei Zayna Aleha, does not mean that, like Rashi is saying, that they figure they can rape or seduce her instead, and therefore they're not going to kill her. What it means is that because women are weaker and they're not involved in battle and in whatever, therefore they're more likely to have Rachmanus on her. They're more likely to have Rachmanus on her. Isha Klei Zayna Aleha, in the sense that they're more likely to have Rachmanus and not kill her. So now we have to figure out what's the story as far as Araya. So Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying if she's an Isha Chashuva, then there's the problem of Arayas. Not like Rashi says that they may seduce her, but rather that they might. So according to Rabbi Yirmiyah, according to the first explanation, So when we say Isha Chashuva, again, still means that she's important, that she's well known to the government. So Rabbi Yirmiyah would say, in that case, they're not going to kill her because Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying, I don't accept the Klei Zayna Aleha. I don't accept the concept that they figure women are weaker, therefore we'll have Rachmanus on them. If she's Chashuva, though, fine, they're going to be afraid to kill her. Otherwise, they would have no compunctions about killing her. If she's an Isha Chashuva, though, then fine, we're not worried that they're going to rape her because again she's chashuva. They figure that word will get around. So according to Tosfos, according to this first explanation of Tosfos, according to Rabbi Yirmiyah, if she is chashuv, just never mind whether she's beautiful or not. Beauty doesn't enter into the equation according to Tosfos. If she's chashuv, then there should be no problem.
The Gemara is stating called.
That's Rabbi Idi saying that, but Rabbi Idi is saying that's fine. Rabbi Yirmiyah doesn't have to accept that. Rabbi Yirmiyah does. That's before. That's after Rabbi Yirmiyah. That's Rabbi Idi saying that.
Right.
If she's not choshuv, then Rabbi Yirmiyah says she's osur because they may kill her. They have no compunctions about killing her because I don't hold of Isha Klei Zayna Aleha. Rabbi Idi says still the fact that Klei Zayna Aleha, the fact that they'll have Rachmanus on her. Then that means that therefore we're not worried about them killing her. As far as Arias, Tosfos says. So what's going to happen? One second. Sorry, I'm confusing two different explanations in Tosfos. According to Rabbi Yirmiyah, if she's chashuv, then she's osur because there's still the problem of arayas. Rav Idi is saying that I'm not worried about murder because Isha Klei Zayna. I'm not worried about arayas because if she's important, they're going to be afraid to do arayas with her either. They're going to be afraid to rape her. Tosfos apparently is not concerned about the possibility that they may try to seduce her. So that's one explanation. Another explanation, Tosfos says, that the Gemara is mentioning two things. When we say over here, she'ena chashuva bein hanoshim, we don't mean bein hanoshim like Rashi says, is she beautiful compared to other women? We mean, is a Jewish woman allowed to be in yichud with goyish women? Well, then it depends. So the concern isn't so much so one way of looking at it is we still need to be concerned about whether the women will kill her.
Rape or seduction obviously is not going to be an issue there.
The question would be, though, what about, for example, these goyish women's husbands or boyfriends are going to come and try to be mizana with her? Fine, when she sees that they're coming, she'll leave. She's a bastard. She's able to leave. So therefore, in other words, according to that way of looking at it, when it's among women, then you have two ways. According to Rabbi Yirmiyah, therefore, it would be osur because we're concerned that these women may kill her. According to Rabbi Idi, it'll be mutter because the only concern is that they're going to have Rachmanus on her. Isha Klei Zayna Aleha. They're going to have Rachmanus on her because she's the weaker sex. As far as Arias, we're less concerned because when she hears that the Goyish men are coming, she'll leave. So therefore, according to Rabbi Idi, when it's among women, then there wouldn't be a problem. Tosfos goes on to mention other possibilities. Tosfos mentions the Yerushalmi that understands that we're talking about over here when we say Chashuva means strong woman. Is she strong enough to be able to fight off any attackers? So that's another explanation also. So therefore, again, Arias maybe isn't such a problem, but the question is murder. If she's strong enough, then she might be able to fight them off. Also, Tosfos mentions also from that Yerushalmi that the difference is a woman can more easily pretend that she's a goita because there's nothing particular in her dress or in her or in her body or whatever that marks her as Jewish. Whereas with a man, he has a bris milah, he wears payas, he wears a beard, etc. So that's another consideration. Therefore, that's another consideration. Again, if she's among women, there's less of a problem of shvichas damim because she can pretend to be a goita. Arayas is not an issue, again, because she's among women, and if any of their husbands or boyfriends or whatever come, then she can leave. So, yeah. Okay, so those are all the various explanations that Tosfos had. Tanya Kavaseder of Idi Ba'oven, we learn a braisa in accordance with Idi Ba'oven's explanation. We say a woman, even if there is peace with her, in other words, even if we know for sure they're not going to kill her, according to Rashi, because she's known to the government, and according to Tosfos, because they have rachmanos generally on women, nevertheless, she should not be in yichud together with a goyim, because there's suspect about arayas, that they may seduce her, according to Rashi, or rape her, according to Tosfos. Then we said in the Mishnah, lo yisyachad odom imah, and then the Mishnah continued that a man should not be alone with goyim because they're choshed on shvichus damim. So now some halachas in that connection, tonan abonon, we learn in a b'raisa, yisrael shen is damen lo'erit kochav maderech, if a Jew happens to meet up with a goy on the way, and you always have to be concerned that the goy may try to kill him when nobody is around.
Is that the means he happens to come?
What the Farshim say, by the way, the implication of it is don't try to have him as your traveling partner in the first place, but if he happens to come, then what do you do? Tofle liyamina, attach him to your right side. In other words, let him be to your right side. This way, if the guy tries to pull out a weapon and then harm the yid, this way the yid can grab him with his right hand and then stop him. Rabbi Shmuel ben Yosher Rabbi Yechon ben Brei, he says, it depends. Depends what kind of weapon the guy is carrying. The sayif, if the guy is carrying a sword, and usually a right-handed person usually wears their sword along their left leg. This is the famous story in Sefer Shoftim over there about Ehud, the left-handed shofet, who put his sword on his right side, and then therefore they didn't notice it when they searched him, and he was able to stab Eglon Melech Moav. But they're usually a person keeps
his sword on the right side.
They didn't notice it. They didn't think to look over there. I don't know.
It was hidden.
Yeah, it was hidden. It was a short sword. But the point is, if he had it strapped to his left leg, they still would have, which is the usual place, they still would have found it because he was left-handed and therefore had it strapped to his right leg. They didn't have it. Anyway, the point is that usually a person has a sword. Usually a person keeps their sword on the opposite side of their body from their dominant hand. That way they can pull it out quickly.
That's why.
So therefore.
They wrote on the left.
Yeah. So therefore, besayif. So therefore, if the guy is armed with a sword, toifle liyamina, then yes, like the Tanakhama says, keep him on your right side. That way, if he tries pulling out the. If he's right handed, most people are. So this way, keep him on your right side. This way, the goy's left hand is by your right side, and this way, in other words, you can grab the sword if need be. The makel toifel the smiley. If the goy has a stick, then keep him on your left side, because then what hand does he hold the stick in? It's a walking stick or whatever. He keeps it in his right hand. Same thing. Then you want to be on this side so that if he tries grabbing the stick to hit you, then you can immediately grab it from him.
But if you put a goy on your right side. And your sword is on the left side, obviously, if you're right-handed, he could grab your right hand and prevent it from reaching the sword.
Yeah, but at least like this, if you see him reaching for a sword, then you quickly go and grab the sword first. At least like this, you can't pull it out. And yeah. Hoyu olin b'mayla or yodin b'yirida. What about if you have a Jew and a goy who are going up or down a slope or a ladder or what have you? The Jew should not be below and the goy above, because then the goy may drop something on him accidentally on purpose or fall down on him accidentally on purpose or whatever. The Jew should be on the higher ground and the goy on the lower ground or the lower slope or what have you. Rashi says actually it means you have to do both. You still have to do, like we said before, to make sure that he's on your right side, but also that he should be behind you. So in other words, it should be kind of on an angle. That's what we're saying. In other words, if you're going up a ladder, for example, let him be behind you. But then you're also not directly in front of him. You're a little bit off to the side. So this way,
dangerous. If he ran up to you, you wouldn't see him.
But this way, at least you're on the side. So this way, you can grab his weapon if need be. Val yoshoyach lafonav. Also, a Jew should not bend down to the ground in front of a goy, like to pick up something that he dropped. Shemayorat tesvul golte, because the goy may take the opportunity and smash his head in. Shalai lahechan hoylech, how about another din? If a goy asks a Jew where he's going, yachiv layas aderech, he should broaden the way for him. Which means, so Rashi says it means that, for example, if you say, if, for example, you have to go a parasa, say that I have two parasas to go. What does that accomplish? Because then the goy may figure, in that case, I don't have to be in any hurry. I can wait till we're closer to the city or whatever, till we've got a parasa and a half or something, and then attack him. Meanwhile, after a parasa, you've left already. As we find a similar thing that Yaakov did to Esav, Dichtiv, you have the pasuk where Esav offers, let me have some of my men, or let me travel at your pace, let me go with you, let me travel at your pace. And Yaakov says, no, I'm going much slower. Ada she'ovei el Adoni Seira, until I come to my master to Seir. Uchtiv, and then the pasuk says, Yaakov nosa sukkos, it says that Yaakov only went to Sukkot. He never went to Seir. So now,
how can he go to Seir when Esav is next to him?
Right now, Esav is offering to travel with him. He says, as far as Yaakov is willing to go. Yaakov says, eventually I'll come to you in Seir, but right now, eventually I'll come to you in Seir, so you go on ahead, I'll meet up with you over there. Meanwhile, he never gets to Seir. So now, Rashi mentions on the Pasuk that actually it wasn't really a lie on Yaakov's part. As a matter of fact, we are going to come to Seir, the Moshe Mashiach, all the Moshe Mahasiyah, and Lishpetas Har Esav. We're going to go to Har Esav and judge them. So in that sense, it wasn't really a lie, but nevertheless, though, it was misleading. It is interesting, actually, the Rebbe has a whole sicha in Chelek Chof where he analyzes this Gemara and the Rashi on the Pasuk, the Rashi over here, the Rashi on the Pasuk, a Rambam that talks about these halachas and analyzes in detail about the nuances of difference between the way Rashi explains it over here and the way Rashi explains it over there and the way the Rambam explains it. Part of what the Rebbe talks about is that there's two ways that we can understand Yaakov Vayis HaDerech. One is that you tell him you're going further than you actually are, like Rashi's example over here. Yarchiv can have two different meanings. It can mean you're claiming I have further to go than I really do, like Rashi's example over here. I claim that I have two parasas to go when really I only have one, and I'm not ever necessarily intending to go that extra parasa. Or Yaakov Vayis HaDerech could mean I'm planning to travel slower. I will eventually go to the same place you're going, but I'm going at my own pace, much slower, and therefore don't wait. And so the Rebbe analyzes in detail about the different opinions between Rashi and the Rambam, what we may be talking about over here, what Yaakov did versus what we're talking about over here. One thing. So we know a lot of these halachas that we have in this perek and also in the previous perek we've discussed already, not necessarily do many of these halachas apply to the goyim nowadays, because in later times, eventually the Jewish people did have an effect on the world, and the world did become in many ways more civilized. So nowadays you have laws in most places. You know, a person can't just kill or rape or what have you with impunity. So therefore, many of these halachas don't necessarily apply in the same way anymore. But on the other hand,
So the
Rebbe continues in the Sicha. However, what we're talking about over here, if the goy specifically asks where you're going, then you've got to be a little more suspicious. Then there's more reason that he's doing it. Then there's more reason to think that maybe he's doing it to harm. And therefore, Rashi says over here, what you do is in that case, you outright mislead him. Don't just say, I'm going slower. Say, I'm going further than I really need to.
So
you tell him I'm going a longer distance when really you're only going a shorter distance, and therefore you'll turn off before he ever has a chance to do anything.
With a Jew, you're not allowed if you suspect.
Well, the Jews we'll see in a second. Wait. But on the other hand, the Rambam phrases it somewhat differently, and therefore the Rambam may understand that even if the guy acts, doesn't mean that it's any more of a danger than any of the other cases that we're talking about over here. It depends on the caliber of the goyim at that time. And therefore, maybe you can tell them you're traveling slower than otherwise, but not necessarily to outright mislead them.
If you have a shash, then you can...
So that's what we're saying. It's a question of how we evaluate the sakana. How likely is it to be a sakana? That's the thing. You know, if it's just a run-of-the-mill goy, it's maybe a chashash of sakana. Yeah. If the goy is asking explicitly where you're going, according to Rashi, that would be more of a bori. That would be more of a definite thing. Okay. Fine. So you're asking, what about Jews? Well, it happened once the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva were going to Kziv, which is a town along the coast of Eretz Yisrael. It's near the northern border of Israel. Pogubahem list him, and they met up with some robbers who were Jews. Omer lahem la'anatim hochem. So the robbers asked them, actually list them as more than robbers, list them as armed bandits. Omer lahem la'anatim hochem. So they asked the Talmidim, where are you going? Omer lahem la'akar. The Talmidim said, we're going to Akar, which is further down the coast. Kivin shivyu l'kziv, perishu. But when they came to Kziv, the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva turned off, because now this is our destination. Amrulahan, so the bandits say to them, Talmidim, he asked them, who is Talmidim, are you, that you learn to do such a thing? Amrulahan, Talmidim of Akiva, or the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Amrulahan, so the bandit said, Asher of Akiva, the Talmidim, happier of Akiva, and it's Talmidim, Shalat Pogabahan, Adam Rama Ilam, that no evil person ever had a chance to harm them, because they're smart, and they realize how to avoid such things.
Never harm them, never will harm them.
Ah, so actually Rabbi Yaakov Emden talks about, what about, we know that Rabbi Akiva was eventually captured and tortured by the Romans. So one answer is, yeah, obviously these guys are not Bali Ruach HaKodesh, they're not saying it will never happen, but up till now it never has happened. But also, Rabbi Akiva himself, the Gemara says in Brachas, he wanted to die, HaKodesh Hashem, Kol Yomayis in his fire, and he sort of, in a certain sense, you could almost say he brought it on himself by teaching Torah in public, even though he knew it's dangerous, so that's different. Okay.
Are you allowed actually to do that? When there's a zera that the government says you are not going to learn Torah, teach Torah in public, Mina Shemayim, are you allowed to go?
Yeah, that's
again?
What that was what we discussed before about Rabbi Yehuda ben Kisma and Rabbi Chanina ben Chadian, where Rabbi Chanina ben Chadian held that you can. So yeah, okay. All right, another example. That you have a major machlokas. You have a major machlokas Rishonim between the Rambam on the one side, Tosfos on the other, about the anything other than any case where it's not required that Yehoreg Bal Yaver, are you allowed to be Yehoreg Bal Yaver? The Rambam holds absolutely not. That would be considered committing suicide. The Bali Tosfos hold that yes, you can. And then one of the proofs they bring is from the story of Rav Akiva and Rav Chanina ben Chadian. The Rambam would understand that that's a special case because they're the leaders of the generation and they have to set an example for everybody, but whatever, yeah. Another example, Rav Menashe Hava Odil Beit Tosa. Rav Menashe was one time going to a place called Beit Tosa in Babel. Togu Beit Gandhi, he met up with some robbers, so not bandits, but robbers, like a lesser breed of criminal, like.
How do you know what they are just by looking at them?
Either they were, I don't know.
No, not necessarily, no. I don't know. Maybe armed bandits that carried certain kinds of weapons. I don't know if he didn't. They asked him, where are you going?
And the Pumbedisa, and he does the same kind of thing. He tells them, I'm going to Pumbedisa, which is further than Beit Tosa. He muscled Beit Tosa Parish. When they got to Beit Tosa, he turned off. Amrulay, and they said to him, Talmidei Yehuda Ramah. Stating it as a fact, you're the Talmud of Yehuda, the cheater, meaning Yehuda, meaning Rav Yehuda, the Amora, who was the Rosh Hashiva in Pumbedisa, and they call him a cheater in the sense, like, you learned from him to cheat us. Actually, by the way, with the story with Rabbi Akiva and the people, it doesn't say, well, actually, yeah. Yeah, the Pashtus, they were both Jews, as the Gemara was going to say, both sets. Okay, anyway. So you're the Talmud.
They're going to
have more Jews, and the list in before were also Jews.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, you're the Talmud of Yehuda the cheater, that you learned from him how to cheat us. Amar lahu, so Rav Menashe answers them, Yanitule, so you know him? You know him that he's a Ramai? What a chutzpah for you to say like that. Or Rabbi Hanan also differently. You know him, you know what a great Rosh Hashiva is, and you have the chutzpah to call him a Ramai? Yehei Rav, the lehevu hanu inshi b'shamte. So it should be Hashem's will that you people should be in his cherem. You should be in cherem for making fun of Rabbi Yehuda, which you're allowed to do. That one of the cases that a person is to be put in cherem is when he's mevazel tamid chacham. Well, they went and continued stealing for 22 years. V'loy atzlachu, and they weren't successful. Kiven dechozu, once they. So the simple explanation is it means for the next 22 years, they were never successful in their gneiss.
22 years?
So why did it take them 22 years to catch on? So Marsha says, because we find, for example, in the Torah, that 22 years can be called Yomim Achadim, can be called a short amount of time. We find that Rivka tells Yaakov, be away for Yomim Achadim, till Esav calms down, and he was away for 22 years. So therefore we see 22 years can be considered a short amount of time. After that, once they saw it's 22 years have passed, and we're still having this, they realize that this is for the long term. We better do something about it. The Chida actually understands differently. The Chida understands what it means is for the next 22 years, everything went along normally. All of a sudden, after the end of the 22 years, all of a sudden they see we're starting to lose our touch.
How would they connect?
Well, given that they were fort Jews, they realized that maybe the Chedim is the problem. Given the Chodu, once they realized this was the case, also Kulu Tabu Shamtayu, they all came to Beis Din to ask for release from the Chedim. And to do tshuva. However, among them there was one weaver, Deloyosa, who did not come to be master the chayim. He said, I don't care, I'm still going my own way. the Sharia Shamte to release the Kherim. Achle Arya, and so he was eaten up by a lion. Beni Yoda says, why of all things particularly the lion? Because he made fun of Yehuda. Guru Arya Yehuda. Yeah.
Hainu, the other one,
they did Tshuva, and they were matter than the Kherim. Hainu Da'amri Inshi, this is like the expression people say, Yudona Delay Taizan, a gaudi, a weaver, who is not humble, who is a Baal Gaiva, and actually says usually Gaudonim, we learned before, that usually weavers are usually low-class people, so a weaver who has no boshes upon him, the like Taizan, that he has no humility, Shata Batu Mishni, a year is taken off of his life. So like here, this guy had no anivus, because he didn't want to become master of the Kherim, and therefore years were taken off of his life. Tosis brings a different gear, so that there's not Deloitte Taizen, but the Latye. Giudona the Latye, a weaver who's been cursed, is shot the butts from Mishnei. He loses years off his life, in the sense like the poor get poorer and the poor get poorer, is the expression. Yeah, okay, so it means at least 1 year. So the Gemara finishes off. Tochazi mebet maben ganve bovel listim de Eretz Yisrael. Come take a look at the difference between the ganovim of bovel versus the listim of Eretz Yisrael. Where listim are armed bandits, they're a much worse class of criminal, but they were in Eretz Yisrael, and look how respectfully they spoke of Rabbi Akiva. Asher Rabbi Akiva was Amidav, as opposed to the ganovim, which are sort of a higher class criminal, but they're in bovel, and look how chutzpahdik they said. You're the Talmud of Yehuda, the cheater. So you see the difference between people of Eretz Yisrael, even the low class ones of Eretz Yisrael, versus the better quality people in Babel.
Good
company. Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says,
a Jewish woman should not assist at a birthing of a goy.
Because she's causing that a child is going to be born who's going to end up worshipping Avodah Zarah. But a goita is allowed to be the midwife, is allowed to assist at the birth of a Jewish woman, which we'll see in the Gemara the details about it. Yeah.
That's
halacha. Hold on. We'll get to the Gemara. We'll talk about halacha. First, we have to talk what the halacha is midinah de Gemara. Then we have to talk about what happened nowadays, but one thing at a time.
Another thing, Bat Yisrael,
Latonic Bnashal Ovet Shal Ovetis Kechavim, a Jewish woman should not nurse the baby of a goita, same reason. Avol avedes kachavim minika b'nasha Yisrael b'roshusa. But a goita is allowed. You're allowed to have a goita nurse a Jewish baby as long as it's on the property of, as long as it's in the roshus, on the property of the Jewish woman, of the mother. Don't allow her to bring him home because she may kill him there without anybody seeing. So Tosfos points out the same thing in principle is true as far as birthing. Also, the difference is the Mishnah didn't have to mention it because usually in those days everybody gave birth at home. But a baby, you have to be informed that.
So Mephoshim points out, we have
the famous thing that Moshe did not want to nurse from the Mitzvah. However, the Medrash mentions specifically because he was going to eventually talk with the Shinah. So that's a special case.
Otherwise,
in principle, it should be mutter. Now, with that said, it is true, and the Poskim bring, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that On the other hand, it's not a good idea to do because the goita eats straight for food and therefore it has a bad effect on the child. But nevertheless, in principle, as far as a matter of swift halacha, it is mutter. It's not the right thing to do. And even if you do have to have it, I think it's brought in Shulchan Aruch that you should tell the goita to make sure that she only eats kosher food during that time, so at least to minimize the bad effect on the child. But yeah, as far as a matter of swift halacha, it is allowed with the conditions that we'll see in the Gemara. Wait. So, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. Bat Yisrael let Yaladus Ovedes Kechavim. We said in the Mishnah, a Jewish woman should not be a midwife to a goita. Mepneshim Yaladus Ben Lavedes Kechavim, because she's causing that children who will eventually worship Avodah Zarah. Ovedes Kechavim loit Yaladus Bat Yisrael. And now this part is different than the Mishnah. A goita should not be a midwife to a Jewish woman, because goyim are suspect about murder, and that she may kill the baby. Or the mother, for that matter. Divir Reb Meir, that's what Reb Meir said. Some say no. A goita can be a midwife to a Jewish woman, but only this mancha acheres oimnes agaba, only when you have other Jewish women around. Doesn't necessarily mean they have to literally be around on top of her the whole time, but at least they have to be yoitz v'nichnas. They have to be going in and out regularly so that she would be afraid to try any funny stuff. Avalai Baina Labaina, but not when they're one-on-one, because then it's two risks. Okay. So now, why Reb Meir Omer Afilo Acheres Omer Sagaba Nami, right? Now, why is Reb Meir saying that the Chachamim, we understand, if there are other Jewish women there, they'll prevent anything from happening.
But Jewish Sarek is not necessarily Jewish women.
Relax. Let's first learn the Gemara, and then we'll talk about what the actual halacha is. What the actual halacha is in our times. So the Chachamim, we understand. If you have other Jewish women around, they'll be able to keep an eye on this goyish and midwife and make sure she doesn't try anything that she shouldn't. But why is Reb Meir saying not? Reb Meir Omer Afilo Acheres Omer Sagaba Nami Loi. Reb Meir is saying even if you have other Jewish women there, it's still not allowed. Why not? The reason is the zimni the manchala yoda apusa, because what the goyish woman can do, she can put her hand on the child's head, the katvalei, and kill him. We know that a baby has a soft spot on its skull. She can press down over there and then kill it without anybody noticing. Well, then it's chazi, and it won't be noticeable. So therefore the mayor is concerned about that possibility.
She's not getting paid for a successful birth.
So 1 second. So now the Yerushalmi talks about that if the midwife is a professional later on Chof Zayin and Chof Chet, we're going to talk about dinim involving a professional goyish doctor, where the dinim are different between them and an amateur, because a professional umen leimara umenuse, we're going to say over there that a professional doesn't want to ruin his professional. One second. So over there we say he doesn't want to ruin his professional reputation. On the other hand, so the Yerushalmi mentions that same distinction over here also. Most of the Rishonim don't accept that distinction, and the fact is all Gemara is not making it because there's a difference. With a doctor, okay, you had a patient who was alive already, and all of a sudden dead under the doctor's care, the doctor is going to lose his good reputation. Whereas midwives, okay, you have, unfortunately, there are babies who are stillborn or whatever, so therefore she could get away with this, and even if she's a professional, not necessarily would it ruin her reputation. Because, okay, not all births are live births anyway. Okay.
Today.
Wait. Okay. Piyahi itza, like we have the example of a certain goyish woman, the Amr al-Khabata, where one time she's arguing with another goy, with another, and calling her, and she calls her a name. Milda Yehudaita, Bach Milda Yehudaita. You midwife of Jews, the daughter of a midwife of Jews. Like that was the worst curse you could think on her. Omrullah and the other woman who had been called that says, you think because of that, you think that I'm helping the Jews? Let me tell you. Nefishin Bishtadahi Itza, let so and so many bad things happen to you for calling me a name like that. You think I'm doing it to help the Jewish people? Just the opposite. To come ashpil naminayu dama, because I caused blood of theirs to be spilled, ki ufya denar, like the amount of foam that's in the river. Because in other words, she did, like we just said, she killed the babies without anybody noticing.
People still use it.
Right. Well, they didn't know. In other words, so okay, she has a higher than normal percentage of stillbirths. But okay, again, unfortunately, you know, in those days, many pregnancies ended in stillbirths or other problems like that. So therefore, sort of, Meir is concerned about that, and therefore he says that a goyta shouldn't be attending at a Jewish birth, even if there are other women around. The Rabbanan, what are the Rabbanan answer for that? Omrulay, they would say to the mayor, Loihi, that's not so. We don't have to suspect of the thing. What about what this woman said? The Milsa Dalma Hudir Kimta, she was exaggerating. She was just saying something in order to have a last word in the argument. She didn't, it's not necessarily would she have gotten away with such a thing. Like you said, yeah, if there was such a high percentage, people would have noticed. So therefore, it's not a problem if you have other. So therefore, right. So they say, if there are other women around, if there are other Jewish women around, then it's not an issue. If there's not, then the Chacham would agree you're not allowed to. But then really she could get away with it.
But it's kind of an issue. She doesn't have a choice.
Okay, so wait. Okay, so I guess we may as well talk about it over here. Fine. No, you know what? Let's wait. We're going to talk soon in the Gemara about Ava. We're going to get there. After that, after we finish with the basic din of the Gemara, then we'll talk about how it shakes out in halacha marriage. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Bat Yisroel Leitonik, that a Jewish woman should not nurse a goyish baby. But vice versa is allowed as long as it's in the house of the Jewish woman. Tana Rabbanan, so we learn in a Braisa, a similar machlokes. Bat Yisrael leitonech benasha leavedes kachavim. A Jewish woman should not nurse a goyish baby, because she's eventually causing that children will be raised for avodah zarah. But avodah kachavim leitonech benasha bat Yisrael. And vice versa, a goyta should not nurse a Jew's baby, because she's suspect of bloodshed. She may again kill the baby when he's under her care. Give her a mayor, so says her mayor. Like we said in our Mishnah, a goita can nurse a Jew's a Jewish child when there are other women over her and watching. Whoever they are, it could be the mother, whoever, no, pastors, it has to be Jewish women, but whoever it is,
it has to be pastors.
I mean, it's the same, the goyim are posh on Shvut HaDomim, I don't see where the safety in numbers necessarily is.
All the goyim
are. No, and obviously not, but we don't know which ones are and which ones aren't, you know. So, the pastors, when we say achteris, we mean other Jewish women, the mother herself and other women, whatever. Avaloi bena levena, but not when they're one-on-one. Rav Meir, why is Rav Meir saying it's also even if it's with other women around? Even if there were other Jewish women around, it would still be also. Because, just like he was saying before, that they could kill the baby without anybody realizing by pressing on the soft spot, here he says a different thing. It can happen, the goita can smear poison on her breast before she goes to nurse. Actually, it actually takes out the word mavroi over here. He says mavroi comes in only later. Here we're not even talking about while she's still outside the house. We're talking about as she's sitting there in the house getting ready to nurse, she can smear the stuff on the kafale and then kill the baby with that poison. So Gemara points out it's tzricha. Now, why do we need the machloikis of the mayor in both cases, as far as the birthing and as far as the nursing? Because because if we were only told the machloikis in the case of the birth, you would say, Bahi Kamir Rabban and the Shari, because there we would argue that Rabbanan holds mutter when there are other women around. Deloy Eksha, because it will be impossible for the goita to try anything that she shouldn't. Mishum Da'acheris Roya Soysa, because the other women around there will see, and they'll see if anything's going wrong. Abba Manika, but when it comes to a nursing, to a wet nurse, the Eksha, the Shaita Layla, she could, after all, she could apply the poison to her breast before she ever comes to the house to nurse. The kafale, and then when she comes and nurses and kills him, and nobody even knows because nobody's around to see when she puts that on. Ema modulei le Rameir. You would think maybe the Chachamim agree with Rameir in that case, that you can't do it. The Iyashmin and Menika, on the other hand, if we were only told the case if we're only talking about the case of the wet nurse, you would say, and Rameir is Machna over there, you would say, by he called Rameir to Osir, that only there is Rameir saying it's Osir, again, the same logic, the Shaitel is Sam Ladad Me Abroi Vakatale, because she could apply the poison before she ever comes to the house. Avam Yaledes Loyapshir, but with a Mialedes, she's there on the spot with the baby. It's not so easy. Where there are other women watching her, or coming in and out of the house or whatever, maybe it's not so easy for her to get away with pressing on the soft spot. Maybe in that case you would agree with the Rabbanan. Tzricha, that is why we needed both machlokes to say that a mayor is makel, is machmir in both cases, and the chachamim are makel in both cases.
It's a little harder to accept that because, I mean, it's just as difficult to press on the child's head than it is to put some poison.
Putting poison she can do at home before she ever comes. That's the point. As opposed to pressing the baby's head, still, I mean, you have to be sitting over there and doing it. Other women are likely to notice, hey, what are you doing with the baby's head over there? As opposed to, they have no way of knowing even whether there's poison on her breast before she comes in or not. So different cases. By the way, before we continue with the Gemara over here, Mefoshim point out an interesting thing. We know it says in Parshas Vayera, it says Henika Bonim Sara, that Sara nursed babies, that all the noble women and whatever came with their babies, and Sara nursed all of them. How does that fit with you? You're not supposed to. Nevertheless, the halacha still applies. We're not saying a matter of chashuva. We're saying over here our Mishnah, and both the Chachamim and Rav Meir agree that a Jewish woman is not allowed to nurse goyish babies because you're raising a child for avodah zarah. So how is Sarah able to do that? The one answer is actually the question is, you said, how do you know they became a avodah zarah? So actually, well, in our Mishnah, it's not necessarily you know the child. I mean, after all, the child could grow up to be a ger also, but you go according to the majority. However, yes, one answer that Mephoshef gives is, in fact, the Medrash says all those babies that Sarah nursed all ended up becoming Yirei Shamayim. Not necessarily full-fledged ger, but at least that they didn't worship, they gave up over the Zara. Sarah being a Nevi'ah would have known that. So that's one answer. The Taz gives another answer that maybe we're talking about on a regular basis. Maybe it's not a one-time thing. Another one of the Mephoshim on Rashi, I think, the Erba Sadeh, gives another answer that's different when she has a lot of extra milk and it's hurting her, the pressure, that's then she's allowed to nurse whatever baby is available. And here, Sarah obviously had a lot of milk because the fact is she was able to nurse all those babies, so that would have been another reason to be there.
Did she
have
to smile?
What?
She
had to smile. Did she nurse Shemal? Why would she have? Hagar herself, I'm sure, was perfectly capable.
That's
a different din, that on Shabbos you're allowed to express it. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So here also, we with Hilchos Shabbos, we know that the concept that if a woman is engorged, she has too much milk, then she's allowed to express it on Shabbos. You're not allowed to nurse the baby on Shabbos, obviously, but to express it into a container or whatever, no. So the only way it's mutter is if she's engorged, if she has too much milk, she's allowed to express it, but even then you have to do it, have to be able. You put something inedible in the cage first or something so the milk goes to waste, so that way you're not, because otherwise it would be a tolder of a law on Shabbos. But yeah, so here it would be a similar thing. So far, so good. But okay, so far we said though that a blanket statement that a Jewish woman is not allowed to help as a midwife for a goy, for a goy. And both the Chachamim and Rav Meir agree to that. But the Gemara says a Rav Meir, I have a contradiction. A Braita says Yehudis Yaledes Avedes Chachamim B'Sechar Abba Leizachina. A Jewish woman is allowed to be a midwife for a goy if she's getting paid, but not for free. So we see, so why isn't the Mishnah or the mayor or anybody making such a distinction? The answer is, Amar Rav Yosef, Yischar Shori Nishum Eva. Rav Yosef says that's different. If she's being paid, then there's a problem of Eva. If you try to get out of it, then I'm willing to pay you, you're a professional midwife, and you're not willing to, assist in my birth, it's going to cause anti-Semitism. As opposed to, if it's Bechinam, she has a built-in excuse. Look, I have work to do, I have to work for a living or whatever, so therefore I'm not available to do it for free. But for pay is different. Okay.
That's the base, not enough.
Well, all right. Now, Rav Yosef thought to say in this connection, what about helping her give birth on Shabbos for pay? Should also be mutter, Mishum Eva, for the same reason, because of Eva. Different Rishonim talk about the question, are we talking about, putting all of the Mephoshim agree that we're not talking about over here what she was doing would involve a malacha d'oraita. There's no question you're allowed to do a malacha d'oraita to save a Jew's life, not on Shabbos, not a goy. Although we'll talk about soon what the more contemporary post-skin to talk about that. But the basic din is you're allowed to have a mitzvah actually at the Kuach Nefesh to save a Jew's life on Shabbos, not a goy. So pretty much all the Mephoshim agree over here. We're not talking about malacha d'oraita. Are we talking about Rav Yosef is thinking that maybe only if it's malacha d'rabbanan involved? Or maybe is Rav Yosef talking about where there's no malacha involved at all? Not d'oraita, not d'rabbanan.
Professional?
Just we're talking about professional. She's being paid. So Rav Yosef is thinking that she should be allowed to do it on Shabbos. Again, according to some of the Rishonim, Rav Yosef is thinking maybe even if there's malacha d'rabbanan involved, as long as there's nothing d'oraita. Tosfos, for example, holds according to that. Other Rishonim say that no. What we mean is, If there's no malacha at all, not d'oraita, not d'rabbanan, then Rav Yosef is thinking you'd be allowed to on Shabbos because of Eva. However, Amalei Abaya, Abaya says to Rav Yosef, no, because we shouldn't say like that because she has a built-in excuse. Yachlo Meimava. After all, the Jewish woman can say to the goyta, there's a reason why I can't assist you on Shabbos. Didan or our people, Jewish women, Jewish babies, the mintri Shabbos who keep Shabbos, mechalalin alai, or then therefore it's reasonable enough. We can say, we'll mechalal one Shabbos in order that they can keep many more Shabbosim, which the Gemara and Yuma want to talk about the source for the concept, the Korach Nefesh, the Shabbos. That's one of the ideas of it. Mechalal all Shabbos achas, so that later on he'll be able to keep many other Shabbos. Did who, your people, the Lemintri, Shabbos, who don't keep Shabbos, learn Mechalalin, and we should not be able to be Mechal Shabbos, for you, even with pay.
Right.
So in other words, Abaya is saying, in other words, you're able to do that, and there won't be Eva. That's a reasonable sounding excuse that the Goyim will accept, and therefore it shouldn't cause Eva. Now, I know you're wondering about that, so wait, let's load a few more lines, and then again, we'll start talking about how all this shakes out in later times. Okay. Another example. So Rav Yosef Lamema, Rav Yosef also thought to say, when we were talking about a Jewish woman nursing a Goyish baby, and we said she's not allowed to because she's raising, because then the kid is going to grow up and worship Avodah Zarah. Rav Yosef thought to say, Anuki b'schar shori b'shem Eva. It should be allowed to nurse the baby for pay. Again, because if not, then there's Eva. You're a professional wet nurse. Why are you discriminating and then nursing only Jewish babies and not mine? However, Abaya says, again, she has a built-in excuse. The wet nurse can say like this, depending on her situation. If she's not married, she can say, I don't want to nurse your baby. I don't want to take that responsibility because I want to get married and nursing your baby is going to interfere with my plans for that. And if she's already a married woman, she can argue, Loikam is the Hamna Ba'afit Gabra. I don't want to be dirty or unattractive to my husband. Like, you know, the baby spits up on her, makes on her, or whatever. And therefore, she has that as an excuse. And therefore, again, it's not necessarily the goyt may think, at least, that it's not that I'm discriminating against you because you're a goyt. I don't want to take on this job right now because of my personal situation. So it's not an issue with
it.
If she has children of her own, obviously, well, she's, just because she's married doesn't necessarily mean she has children.
Say, you know,
obviously, depending on the circumstances, whatever excuse works, in other words, that buyer is saying. Okay. So now that we're at the end of this part of the Gemara, because now the Gemara is going to digress onto another topic. So now is the time to talk about how do these halacha apply in later times and in our time. So one thing is they bring, that's for example, the Ramban, among the many hats he wore, besides being one of the great Rishonim, he was also a professional doctor, and in particular he used to do infertility treatments. If a woman was infertile, he would help her conceive.
Where was he?
The Ramban lived in Spain, in northern Spain.
Sorry.
Yeah. So he did his treatments for both Jews and Lahavdil for Goyim. So his cousin, Rabbeinu Yonah, one time wrote to him a letter, a yashakoyach to you, you're causing more descendants of Amalek to be born. But the fact of the matter is, obviously, the fact is that Ramban did not change his mind and did not stop what he was doing. What about this whole thing over here about Miyalat Esbeim Leveret Shechavim? One thing is that I don't know if the Ramban himself writes about the Chassam Sofer, there was a long tshuva about it, where he discusses, among other things, in those times already you had other doctors available anyway. It's not like if the Ramban didn't treat these women, they wouldn't have anybody to treat them and they would be left infertile. Mm-hmm. They'd just go to a Goyish doctor. So as long as it's happening anyway, therefore, the Ramban is entitled to do it and collect his fee for it. So it would be happening either way. It's not like there would be any less descendants of Amalek, as Rabbeinu Yonah is putting it, if the Ramban was not involved in it. You just have other Goyish doctors would fill it. Well, Ava is a different matter. So Ava is another matter. So there you get into the whole question. So on the basis of that, basically that kind of thing is the Chassam Sofer discusses over there, and the Pesach Tshuva brings it in Shulchan Aruch. That is basically the heter that we have nowadays. That Jewish doctors is the beginning of the heter that Jewish doctors are allowed to treat gynecologists, obstetricians, or whatever are able to treat Goyish women on that basis, because you have many others who would be doing it anyway. So therefore, it's not like you not doing it would prevent it from happening.
What about on Shabbos?
So now you get into the question. So our Gemara was saying that you have an excuse because of Shabbos. However, already the Ritva points out, and he was in the times of the Rishonim, that already the Goyim are wise to that excuse and they don't accept it. So therefore you're back to the Eva thing. But now what does that allow you to do? Does it allow you to actually be doing Malachas Daraisa? So you have, again, a lot of discussion about it. The Mishnah Berurah actually says very sharply, absolutely not. He says all Jewish doctors nowadays are Mechal on Shabbos, because they treat Goyim on Shabbos as well. And the fact is, based on our Gemara, based on the Gemara in Yoma and other places, it's completely not allowed. On the other hand, to treat Goyim on Shabbos, to treat Jews on Shabbos is a matter of the Korach Nefesh for Jews. But to treat Goyim on Shabbos, what's the het? Or to assist in booth or whatever on Shabbos, it'd be Mechal Shabbos, Daraisa, Darabonon, whatever, what's the heter for it? The Mishnah Berurah can't find any. On the other hand, you have the Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this, Rav Shlomo Zalman discusses it, and it's brought in Shmiras Shabbos Kilchasa, that actually no. Because it's more than just the problem of Ava. Mm. Ava is more like a longer term thing that they call anti-Semitism. Here, at least up until close to modern times, and even to a certain extent nowadays also, if a doctor refuses to treat a patient, their own life is going to be in danger. In the old days, especially, but even now, okay, you know, they'll be thrown in jail. That's also a certain danger to their life. So you have that. Plus, you have the fact they both point out, both Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman point out, nowadays, what with the mass media and everything, if a Jewish doctor were to refuse to treat a Goyish patient on Shabbos or on weekdays, it would be known all over the world. And so on all that basis, yes. So Rav Moshe writes, he has several guidelines over there for a Jewish doctor on Shabbos. He should publish only his office number, not his home number. He should he should, if he has a colleague, another one is if he has a fellow doctor who can cover for him in the hospital, then he should. And even if that other person is also a Jew but not sharing the Shabbos, then at least let the other guy be doing it, what he's doing in the hospital is mutter on the basis of Ava or whatever, rather than what's he going to be at home? He's going to be driving or watching TV or what have you, and also be doing malachas where there's no heter of Ava. So a number of guidelines like that that Moshe has for Flum Dach.
He says, for example, that
a doctor, for example, shouldn't necessarily be giving out his beeper number. I don't know to what extent that applies nowadays. If you're on call from a hospital, right. So then it's just as much as possible you try to switch shifts with other people. If you can't, then you can't. Then you have to minimize the Chilul Shabbos in the hospital as much as possible where it doesn't impact treatment, but otherwise. So that's the gist of how these halachas shake out nowadays. So in principle, it should be author, as the Mishnah Berurah is saying, but practically speaking, because we live in a different kind of society, there's really no choice, and therefore, when it has to be done, then it has to be done.
It's very different from what we hear usually, is that people say, well, these doctors say, you know what, I'm Shabbos, there's a hetek. It's not a
heter. So according to the Moshe, it is. There's a series of heterim that we're using over here. In theory, it should be osur, but in practice, there are various heterim that come in.
Still considered Machal Shabbos?
Apparently not. So apparently, it's you're doing it. You're playing chachamim. You're doing it because of the problems of Ava and whatnot, and therefore, what you're doing is allowed up the halacha. Is the best situation? No, but we don't live in the best situation. So no, you wouldn't consider it a
problem. In Israel, there wouldn't be any problem.
In Israel, there would be different issues. I mean, there you have most of the doctors are Jews, so there you have other issues involved. But yeah.
So there
you can't say, for example, let's say, I don't know how it works as far as the fertility treatments, for example. You can't necessarily say if you weren't, then they'd go to some other doctor who would. I don't know how it applies there. Okay. Onwards. Sover of Yosef Lamena. Now, Rabbi Yosef thought to say another deal. This one is not directly connected with what we said before. It's sort of indirectly connected, but again, we're of Yosef thought to say that a certain din does not apply when you're being paid for it because of Ava. So Rabbi Yosef thought to say as follows. Now this is what we learn in a braisa. And people who pasture small animals, like sheep and goats, where therefore they usually let them graze in other people's fields and damage them. Such people, like Mylan Velaimirigin, we do not lift them up, we do not lower them down. Now, what does that mean? Basically, Loy Mylan means that if their life is in danger, you don't save them. Velaimirigin means that you don't outright go and kill them or throw them into a pit or whatever. But basically, if they're already in danger, you leave them there. So that's Ovid Kachavim. Which kind of Ovid Kachavim we're talking about is also a whole discussion. Are we talking specifically, pretty much everybody says we're talking specifically Ovid Avodah Zarah. But some of them are approaching to say maybe even it only applies to the original seven nations of Canaan. Well, it definitely applies to them. Does it apply to other Ovid Avodah Zarah? Maybe, maybe not. You have different opinions among the Rishonim. Again,
seems to be.
Well, okay, but the Ovid Kachavim can also be what's changed by the censor. Probably the original word with Nochrim or something. I don't know. Anyway, what's so bad about Roy Behemadaka, again, is that they're grazing in other people's fields. Now, Tosfos says, okay, so how are they any worse than any other kind of goslin or whatever? Tosfos says, because that's just it. Because it's only considered a zela d'rabbanan, therefore the Chachamim wanted to make it an extra strong thing against them so that people shouldn't do this kind of thing. One of the other Mephoshim says a different answer, that since they do this habitually, then they're considered in that sense like a mummer. They've decided a certain mitzvah doesn't apply, and we're going to say on Omer Beis that the mummerim are in this category also. So Lug Mylin Vilim Yeridin, again, we don't save them, we don't lower them down. So, well, here we're talking about Roy Behemadak, means Jewish Roy Behemadak, but yes, Goyim or Chayim means the first one. Yeah. Anyway, the Ovid Kachavim means Goyim, obviously. Roy Behemadak means Jewish shepherds, the Behemadaka who go and let their animals graze in other people's fields. Yeah.
So not all together. Ovid
Kachavim, the Roy Behemadaka, the two different things. Ovid Kachavim are Goyim, but Roy Behemadaka and Jewish Roy Behemadaka. So Lemailin Vlemirin, we say you don't save their life, but you don't throw them in either. By the way, I mean, does that also mean, does it mean that you're not allowed to save them? Or if he says it just means you don't have to, but you know you are allowed to. And again, you also have the whole discussion, does it apply to the goyim nowadays? Actually, with this, and also what we're going to learn on the days about minim and so forth, the Chazon Ish has a vote on it. He says that many of these minim maybe only apply in a first of all, Tosfos already mentions that maybe they only apply in a time when Yad Yisrael Tekif, when Jewish people are in power, not necessarily when we're in Golos and we're not. But second of all, the Chazon Ish goes further and he points out, in the olden times, like in the times of Tanakh and the times of the Gemara, when the course was more openly revealed in the world, and a person is deliberately doing these things, like being a mean or whatever, then you could argue he's chayav misa l'maylan v'l'meridin, maybe even by some of them we're going to say on our base meridin, that we do throw them in the first place. Nowadays, in times like now, when the course is hidden in the world, nobody's going to see it as we're doing it to protect the Yiddishkeit. People are just going to see it as terrorist acts. And therefore, it wouldn't be possible. Okay, so Rabbi Yosef thought to say, "Asuki b'schar shori mishum eva." So Rabbi Yosef thought to say, if you're being paid for getting them out of the pit, let's say, then it should be mutter again because of eva. Otherwise, the goy is going to argue you're discriminating against them, and it's going to cause anti-Semitism. However, Amalei Abaya, but Abaya says again, you have a built-in excuse. Yochol loy maloy, you can say to the goy, "Koi bria igra, my son is up on the roof. I have to get him down from there right away. So yes, you're willing to pay me, but it's more important for me to save my son's life." Inami, or you can use another excuse. Nikita li zimna lebe davar. I have an appointment at the government, at a government office, so if I don't go, then I'm going to lose out. So therefore, yes, you're going to pay me, but meanwhile, I'm going to lose out from whatever I was supposed to be accomplishing over there.
The guy's going to die, I mean,
so. Meanwhile, the guy's going to die, but that's the point is that's not your problem, says Abaya. Okay. More on this topic. Toni Rav Abohu kamed Rav Yechanan. Rav Abohu taught a braisa in front of Rav Yechanan. Ha'ovdik ha'chavim for her, Roya Be'emadaka. Again, the Ovdik ha'chavim and the Roya Be'emadaka. Loi Milan v'loi Meridin. We say we don't lift them out, we don't save their life, but we don't lower them in. We don't kill them via Gaim either. Tosfos mentions in this, by the way, the famous expression, Rashi brings it in Parshas V'Shalach, we had a few weeks ago, Tov Sheva Mitzrim, or Kosher Sheva Knanim, whatever, Haroik. Tosfos says that's talking about during wartime. During wartime, then yeah, even what's considered the best of them, you don't have Rachmanos on any of them. War is war. But here we're talking about during peacetime. I saw, by the way, a funny vote on that somebody wants to say. The Romans had a nickname for Titus. Titus, when he became the one who destroyed the Beit Hamikdash, when he became emperor a few years later, the Romans all liked him a lot, and they called him the best of humanity. So therefore, when the Medrash says over there, Tov Sheva Goyim Haroig, it means that kind of Tov Sheva Goyim would have been better off if he'd been killed when he'd been younger, so that way he wouldn't have caused all the tzaras that he did. Yeah, anyway. Okay. Avol, but Rav Abohu continues in his braisa, Haminin. Minim, which minim has a few different meanings, but over here Rashi says it means priests of Avodah Zarah. Whether they're Goyim or whether they're Jews, the point is they're into Avodah Zarah, very much more so than the average worshiper.
It
doesn't always. Min has different meanings in different places in Shas. Here, that's what it means. V'hamasoris and Moisrim, who master Jewish people to the Goyim. V'hamumasoris.
Because you drowned
other people, therefore you were drowned. A person who's moiser in the active form eventually himself becomes a moiser. He eventually becomes a moiser. He ends up that other people inform on him, and he gets in trouble with the government. Yeah. Anyway, so that's Masoros. Vamumrim. And mumrim or shemadim, whatever, people who habitually violate one or more mitzvahs. Meridin v'loy milin, then we throw in and we don't take them out. In other words, then some mafoshim say it means maybe we throw them in a place where they will die, not necessarily we kill them via dayim. The Rambam says it means actually you kill them via dayim. The hoyu, by the way, was added by the censors. They didn't want to say that. Nowadays, you're allowed to do it hoyu. In the old days, they were allowed to do it, whatever you find. As a matter of fact, the goyim in general were very against the whole Masechta Avodah Zarah. It was one of the early printings of Shas in the 1500s. They didn't allow them to print the Masechta at all. Anyway, yeah. So meridian like Mylan, you lower them, you don't raise them up. By the way, this is what we're saying about Masoris, at least, for example, and then again, that Amam is saying you kill him outright. There's a story involving the Rimi Gash, where in his town there was a Moser, and one year, when Yom Kippur was on Shabbos, they took the guy out during the Ilah and disposed of him. And afterwards, when the government came snooping around, everybody claimed we were all busy davening and nobody, we were all busy with Ne'ilah, we were all partitioned davening and nobody saw what was going on. Yeah. Okay, anyway.
And the Muslim
was in shul on the Kippur, yeah.
It's a similar thing that happened in other times also, yeah.
They got rid of these guys and everybody claimed afterwards they didn't know what's going on. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, so that was the Braita. Omalei, so Rabbi Yochanan says to Rabbi Abahu, how could you say that? Ani shoyne, I learn a Braita that says, L'chol avedas achicha l'rabbis is a mumer, that when the Pasuk says you have to return any lost object of your brother means even a mumer, so if a mumer loses something, you have to return it to him. The Ha'at Amrit Meridin, and you're telling me that we lower them, that we kill them directly or indirectly? What's the logic? What's the logic? If you return them the Hashavas Aveda, then what's the logic that you should be Meridin for them? Tosfos points out, not that we can say that, for example, okay, you return them their money because maybe the Moiser will have, the Mumer, I mean, will have a child or descendants or whatever who are Kshevim. Because the fact that we're mentioning the Chol Aveda Tachicha, which we learn from that Pasuk that you also have a mitzvah to save another year's life, implies, therefore, so Rabbi Yochanan's Braita says that you have to save a Mumer's life close to door, please, which are noisy enough as it is. So you're telling me, on the one hand, that you have a mitzvah to save a mumer's life, his own body is in danger, or his mumer, and you're telling me, you, Rabbi Bohu, are telling me in a braita that mumerim are in the category of meridin v'lay ma'alin. Smimi kan mumer. Erase from your braita the word mumer. So you have minim and masodis, but not mumerim. That's what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. Okay, the question is volitionally, right? Why couldn't Rabbi Bohu answer that there's a difference? Can mumma echol nevelos l'tei oven? Can mumma echol nevelos l'hachis? That there's two kinds of mummer. You have one kind, for example. Well, the difference is that he eats l'tei oven. Is that in other words, he doesn't have kosher. He doesn't have kosher meat available. He's not eating treifas because he davka wants to anger Hashem. He's eating treifas because there's nothing better to eat. So it's not allowed, but it's a different kind of mummer, as opposed to an oichol nevelos l'hachis, where he's doing it deliberately to anger Hashem, where there's just as good kosher food available, and he deliberately eats the treifas. So maybe there are bohus braisa that mentions mummerim in that connection is the l'hachis, and Rabbi Yochanan is about returning him his lost object and saving him, whatever is about l'tei oven. The answer is kasava oichol nevelos l'hachis minu.
The answer is Rabbi Yochanan says that somebody who does the Avera
Lahakis, is in the category of a min. So therefore, you're of course. Meaning, in other words, okay, so in other words, you don't have to have two different braises that mention mumerim, where one's talking about Lahakis and the other one's talking about Lachayopin. If he's Lahakis, he's not a mumer, he's a min. And Rabbi Bohu's braise mentioned that minim was meridian of Lemalin. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says, I can't accept that you have mumerim in your braisa because a min would include a mumer l'hachis. A mumer l'te'oven is not so bad that you shouldn't. Right. Only a min includes. No, it includes also a priest of Avodah Zarah, like you said before.
Yeah.
But it also includes a mumer l'hachis. It does not include a mumer l'te'oven, and a mumer l'te'oven is l'chol avedas achicha. You have to return his lost object and save his life or whatever. So he's not in the category of meridin of meridin v'le'mal. By the way, Rashi points out there are other
places in Halakha where you have differences between a min and a mumer. For example, we have a din, that we have another din, for example, but if a min writes a sefer Torah,
then you burn it. As opposed to if other psulim write a sefer Torah, you put it in shame.
You
have a mitzvah to burn it because we assume stam machshavas min l'avodah zarah, the Gemara talks about in various places, and Cholin in particular, that when a min thinks about something, inevitably he's thinking about avodah zarah because it consumes him, and they're getting a priesthood or whatever. Therefore, if he writes a sefer Torah, even if he writes the name Yud Kei Vav Kei, he has in mind Getchka, therefore burn it.
So sorry to interrupt. Whenever you have a Tidei Getchka?
No.
No,
if a goy writes the sefer Torah, then we say stam a goy doesn't have such a machshava for avodah zarah. Then we put it in shame. Then we put it in
gemara. Okay.
So now we have a discussion now talking about mumer. Mumer. When we talk about okay, when we talk about a mumer, and again, we just said that there are two kinds of mumer. Pligi Rav Acha v'Ravina. So Rav Acha and Ravina argue on the definition of a mumer. Chad omer l'te'oven mumer l'hachis min. One says, like what Rav Yochanan just said, that if he does it l'te'oven, then he's called a mumer. But if he does it l'hachis, then he's on a worse level, he's called a min. And again, if he were to write a sefer Torah, for example, you would burn it. And again, according to Rav Yochanan, the min you would be meridian v'lemal, and you'd throw him into the pit and not help him out of it, as opposed to the mumur you would. The chadama, the other one says, no, afilu lahachis nami mumur. The other one says, even if he does it lahachis, he's also only called a mumur. He's mekel. Right, and the Gemara mentions elsewhere that when we had, in general, with these machlokas of Rav Acha and Ravina and Shaf, usually the Gemara doesn't specify which one is machmur and which one is mekel. So we have most of the time. So what does the Gemara say? So the Gemara in Pesachim and also in Chulin. And I think usually Rav Acha is the one who's Mekel and the Halacha is like him, except the three places where Ravina is Mekel and the Halacha is like him. So it doesn't specify which is which, but whichever one is, usually the three particular places that one of them is Mekel, so here it would be the other one, because it's not one of the three. Anyway, Ela is Zehu Min. So rather this opinion says, what would be the definition of a Mekel? This is somebody who worships Avodah Zarah, and again, not just worships it, but is actually a priest for it. So therefore, that's what we mean by a min, not any kind of mumur. Okay, basically, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A braisa says, Ochol parish echad or yatush echad, if a Jew eats one flea or one mosquito, hareis a mumur, then he's a mumur, because those are things that are awesome. And nobody eats them, say, all right. So obviously, if you're eating it, v'hachis, and we're saying that he's a mumur. Why would a person eat a flea or... No, we're not talking about the accident of swallow. We're talking about deliberately. On purpose. He goes and eats a flea or a mosquito. It's not like they taste good. Obviously, he's only doing it because... Come on. Here, he's obviously doing it lahachis. Zichatoni mumur, and the Braita says that he's only a mumur, not a min. So that works according to the second opinion, but what is Rabbi Yochanan on the first opinion do with that? The answer is you could argue even there it's only Lutei Oven because Hossam Boilam is some time of the Surah. He wants to have the experience of tasting something that's awful. He's not doing it lahachis. He wants to see a Jew would never have a chance to take it to the thing. He wants to have the experience. Yeah, he wants to see what it tastes like.
A
mosquito or a flea. So therefore, so yeah. So if he's eating more than one, that's different. Then yeah, you could say, then you could say the more. But yeah. Okay, getting back to, we said in the Braisa, or the Bolli Braisa, Meridian Avaloi Milan, we say we throw such people into a pit, we lower them down into a pit, we don't raise them up from it. But the question is, why do you need both? Hashta, Achusi, Bachzin, and Asukim, Boy, obviously, if you're supposed to throw them into a pit, how much more so? You're not going to take them out there if they're already in there. Why does it need to mention the Avaloi Milan part? The answer is Amar Rav Yosef Achama Amar Rav Sheshes. One needs to call yes, but the only reason it needed to be said was only Shem Hoyt a mile of a bird. What if there was already the person is in the pit? You didn't put him there; he fell in there himself. But let's say, for example, there's a way of getting out of it. There are steps already naturally there or whatever, or a ladder or whatever. Madarna, you're allowed to take it away. You're allowed to, or you're supposed to, or whatever. Yeah, well, but it's not directly, it's indirectly. Why? But the knock at late yula, because the Jew can use as an excuse. Again, you have down there in the pit is a min or a moister or whatever. So you use an excuse. Why am I taking away the ladder? But Alma, because you're saying, I don't want my animals to use this ladder to climb down into this pit and suffocate and die over there. And therefore, I'm taking away the ladder for their protection. Or Rabbeinu Chananel says, actually, you can even say, I'm doing it for your protection. I don't want animals to climb down and harm you. I'll come back later and help you, and meanwhile, by the time you come back, yeah.
Sure, they climb down a ladder and
they... Yeah, whatever. Not a ladder, steps, whatever. Yes, then. Okay. Rabbi Rav Yosef Sami Tavai, Rabbi and Rav Yosef both say a different thing. Lo nitzucha. Shem hoise even up yab the air. What if there's a stone? What if there's a stone on top of the pit? Mechasa, then you can, or next to the pit or whatever that's usually used to cover it. Mechasa, you can use that stone to cover the pit. The point is, you should use that stone to cover the pit with the minu, the moisture in there, because Omar, because again, you use the excuse. Laburi chevis ilavei. I have animals that I need to walk by here. I don't want them falling in the pit. So I'm putting the cover over the pit so they can walk by safe. Ravina Omar. Ravina says a third answer. Shemahoya sulam. Okay, so the previous one, Mila, is actually not a ladder. Mila is like there's natural steps hewn into the ground or whatever. The removal. Ravina is saying a third possibility. Shemahoya sulam. What if there's a ladder there? Masalka, you also take it away. Omar, and you use the excuse, but again, my son is up on the roof. I have to get him down from the roof. So therefore, I need the ladder for that. I'll bring it back later. And meanwhile, you don't bring it back later. So now, it's not, by the way, these Amaroyim are not really arguing with each other. Each one is mentioning a less and less plausible excuse that you could use, where nevertheless, the Braisa is saying, still use those excuses rather than saving the min or the mosque. Again, not necessarily do some of these dinim apply nowadays, but nevertheless, there's a famous thing that the Frida could ever said on this, that when somebody was asking him about what about certain kinds of Jews, they're in the category of these Meridian and Milan, how do you have anything to do with them? So the Frida could ever tells him, you know, there are four halakim in Shulchan Aruch. There's Erechayim, Yerodeya, Evan Ezer, and Choshen Mishpat. These halakhas are at the very end of Choshen Mishpat, like the last siman or two of Choshen Mishpat. So if you learn, if you learn through the Shulchan Aruch like a guy, you start from left to right, then you start with these dinim. If you read it through like a yid, you read from right to left, and you first make sure that you're in good shape with all the other halachas in Shulchan Aruch. Then eventually you'll get to these.
All these explanations that he used for not saving the mummer.
Yeah.
Is that a medical piece
of
the
voice
that's there, or
is it for
the mummer that eventually
gets climbs
out of the pit?
Either one, I guess. Either one. It could be for him, or it could be for any other Goyish bystanders. Yeah, I guess so.